Hello, everyone. I'm not going to read anything to start because I had something to read, and then I read it over a couple of times. It was in the Guardian. It was about some Israeli captives that were set free, and they were giving their story to the Guardian, and they were just talking about how Hamas was like trying to treat them nice, like actually move them to a safer place. And then when that place was getting bombed, actually put some mattresses and like shielded them with their bodies and stuff. And just tried to sort of talk to them about like history and what was actually happening. And it was extremely scary, obviously, but it really kind of like hit home what I've been trying to talk about for months now. And I'm just fucking tired of talking about it. You know, 110,000 people just voted uncommitted in Michigan. More of them are going to vote uncommitted in Colorado. More of them are going to vote uncommitted in Washington State. More of them are going to vote uncommitted in Minnesota. So, like, in the interest of democracy, maybe somebody can listen to what the polity is saying. You know, I'm kind of tired of talking about it. Like, I see people just saying stuff on the internet, like, dumb shit. Like, oh, they've been fighting for 1,000 years. It's fucking stupid. Like, you're so fucking stupid. They haven't. Wake up. I'm tired of it. Comrades and friends, hello. This is the Highlands Bunker Podcast. We're behind enemy lines. We're in the shadow of Rockford Tower. We're in the belly of the Delaware Way Beast. And this is Rob. And we're giving you... This probably won't be the wrap-up episode, but it'll be pretty close. Kathy v. Kathy, the Supreme Court decision. Dunk, dunk. William,
you hear hello. That noise right there? Hey, Rob.
You know what that is?
That's like an 88-page PDF file right there that just dropped into your lap.
Ka-chonk. Ka-chonk.
Yeah, I don't think this will be the last word necessarily, but I think this will probably be second to last. Yeah. You know, who knows? Yeah.
We are joined, as always, with our producer, the super producer, Carl Stomberg. He is here behind the board. That's the thing, right? It's not even really over, because there's still an open charge that got remanded. We'll talk about it. There's still a civil case. That's goofy. We'll talk about that. And then we'll just talk about sort of where it goes. And again, sort of as it continues, what the ramifications are. And if there's anything else we can kind of learn from it as it goes along. Because there is something that I want to talk to about this that I think is sort of indicative of something else we're running into that I didn't really have a full sort of picture of. I still don't. But it's interesting. So we'll get there. Okay, I'm going to do like a quick 3-minute run through. If I miss anything, tell me, and then we'll get to the Supreme Court decision.
Sweet.
There was 5 charges in the trial. Kathy was found guilty of conflict of interest, official misconduct, and structuring. She was found not guilty of witness intimidation and theft. We can get into those details if we need to. At the sentencing, the Judge Carpenter overturned the structuring charge and sentenced and affirmed the guilty verdict for conflict of interest and official misconduct.
Both misdemeanors, right.
That was argued in front of the Supreme Court because of basically Brady violations and other things, other sort of undefined malfeasance from the police. Whether it be the way that the initial indictment or search warrant was handled, the way that the initial contact to some of the witnesses was handled, and also how the evidence was handled, we'll say. But it was all pretty vague. The Supreme Court comes back. They affirm the conflict of interest charge. Remand the official misconduct charge for a retrial or a recharging because of reasons. And this is sort of like the sticking point. So the only real thing that's of discussion for this decision is the remand and the sort of reversal or basically throwing out the guilty verdict for official misconduct and remanding it back to the court for trial. Can you explain how they split this? Because, again, we talked about the jury split, you know, the five. The trial judge threw one out at sentencing, and now the Supreme Court is sort of like sending one back on technicalities. What's going on with the technicalities between official misconduct and conflict of interest?
All right, so conflict of interest, which Kathy was convicted of, that was basically the hiring my daughter to work for me charge. And which was funny. So that was, she was convicted of that. I think that's the one, if you like talk to people on the street about it, they'd be like, yeah, that happens all the time. Like yeah. That's like, they understand it's a crime, but it's, I think that's maybe where you get some understanding or like sympathy in that situation. Not if you would actually get to know the parties involved, but I think like hypothetically.
Well, and again, yeah. You had to kind of be, and if you go back through our series, you'll see that nepotism was not a crime. There has been some new rulings about state nepotism that's come out just recently, sort of based on this. But the charge wasn't nepotism per se. It was hiring family members and close friends and getting a benefit that other employees at the same level were not granted, which was, I think, proven pretty clearly.
Right. So with respect to count four, the official misconduct, that was a conviction at trial. And Rob, remind me, they basically, like, to be found guilty of official misconduct, I believe the jury instructions were like, basically take what you know about the remaining charges, structuring in particular. And then was the other one the conflict charge or one of the felonies? In other words, you would read in sort of like that information. And if you found her guilty of conflict of interest, for example, then it follows that she would be guilty of official misconduct.
Right, because you committed one of these crimes, but you also committed the crime in your official state capacity.
Right.
Which is another crime.
Right. So I think that the legal concept that was discussed at length in the opinion, and then the concurrence slash dissent by Chief Justice Seitz as well, was this concept of spillover. So you imagine these like five counts, these five charges, like these tubs of water, and they've got like the evidence, and you're sort of, you know, you're running with them in place. I think that what the Delaware Supreme Court found was that the jurors in this case shouldn't have been presented evidence that Kathy illegally structured a contract with my campaign group to avoid state procurement law, like when it came to determining count four, the official misconduct charge. They thought that the spillover was like, you know, it's kind of like the concept of fruit of the poisonous tree.
Yeah.
Like once the evidence was illegally obtained, whatever follows based on that illegally obtained evidence should fall by the wayside. It doesn't always, but
you know,
that's kind
I took
of
it,
a
like,
similar
and
concept.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I wasn't even sure if it was about illegally obtained evidence or if it was it the fact that Carpenter, the trial judge, reversed that conviction at sentencing. So if that conviction, if we're saying that, okay, the jury thought there was enough evidence, but the jury was wrong, then there wasn't enough evidence, but then the jury also considered that evidence to make another verdict. Basically, that's the spillover.
Right, that's the spillover, exactly.
But it's what's interesting about it is it's not even that the jury said no to the structuring. They said guilty on the structuring. The trial judge decides that there wasn't enough evidence, and then the Supreme Court says that the jury verdict was based on spillover.
Right.
That actually did not lead to a guilty verdict, but it actually did lead to a guilty verdict to the people who considered it,
right,
and not to the trial judge.
Right.
Do I have that right?
I think that's, yeah, that sounds right to me.
Okay. So yeah. It's a big goof. See, yeah. When I came to that conclusion, I was like, this is a big goof. They're goofing us right now. Because it's just like
activist judges.
Look, they're litigating from the bench. That's what they're doing. I'm sorry. I love you guys. Come on, Chief Justice Seitz. We love you.
Yeah. I'm trying to think more. I guess this is Judge Carpenter's like last mega trial, right? Certainly yes. Mega trial, but I don't know if it was his last act.
I don't know if it was his last official act, but it was his last big trial. I'm almost positive.
And you texted me recently what he's up to now, and we were both like, this is so perfect.
Yeah, so if you guys have been following the Sussex Central saga, where there was a fight, a big fight in the school, it had to be broken up. It's females fighting, and in the fight, I don't know how to say this. It's a high school student, but her boob popped out. And afterwards, while there needs to be some review of that material, apparently it was like converted into memes by some of the officials at the school. So there's a big.
We all remember the 20-year-old Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, Janet Jackson. Look, Janet Jackson, her boob popped out.
It's still really relevant 20 years later.
And so I think the principal or one of the administrators at the school has asked for a review of their termination, I guess, or whatever personnel action happened to them, and that case, that arbitration, I guess, is what it is. They selected a retired Judge Carpenter, R-E-T, period, parentheses.
Yes, that's right. He's an honorary colonel as well. I'm going to throw that out there.
He's a Kentucky colonel?
K-O-L, or C-O-L, period, also. He's R-E-T, period, C-O-L, period.
He's an honorary rear admiral.
Yeah,
so that's what he's doing.
But that was, I was reflecting on that structuring charge today, and like, I think even the Supreme Court opinion mentions that the vast majority of the trial really centered on presenting the state's case, you know, the state's evidence for that count. And as many listeners will remember, it was rather monotonous.
We hated it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that it just... The whole thing is quite strange, the way that it sort of played itself out. Now we come to a situation where the misdemeanor conflict of interest stands. Now, you know, unless they go to the Supreme Court, that's over. So Kathy will have been convicted of a misdemeanor conflict of interest for all of this stuff. The state has the opportunity to retry only on the official misconduct portion, which I guess they can do. You still have the right to a speedy sort of trial, so I don't know how long that will last. I mean, my immediate feeling is this will be dropped sometime in the next few weeks, month. I mean...
Yeah, well, I was going to wonder, did you ask your Galluccio's source like about a day or a deadline? Because like I briefly tried looking it up before the episode tonight. I have like bankruptcy rules falling out of my ears right now for an unrelated project I'm working on.
Yeah.
But so did our friend Lex mention anything?
No, he has no comment on it. I think that the consensus is, not just from Lex, but from other closely placed people that we've contacted on this.
The Chris Barishes of the world.
You know, maybe people gave me some razzle dazzle. I don't know. You know, anything could happen.
With some inflamed rhetoric.
But after all of this, I don't see the benefit, whether it's judicial or political, of retrying another misdemeanor. This doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make sense.
So, we're appealing the Supreme Court on the voting. So,
right.
We only have so much time.
Yeah.
I mean, is that your take? I mean, what is your feeling on? I mean, they're not gonna reindict on this and retry.
I don't think so. I mean, I think that you know, as part of the sentencing, you've already got 500 hours of community service out of Kathy. Like that much of a contribution, I think, to the state is pretty sufficient. I imagine she did it in whatever 500 divided by 24 days is. Like she just knocked it out.
Sure.
Right. I think this one can't, like, remanding, doing a new trial for one misdemeanor doesn't seem likely. Based on, you know, like the AG's office, I guess the remarks from the spokesperson, they seem to be stepping back from that.
Matt one T, he's pulling the T back.
That's right.
Thank you,
Matt.
He's like... So the only other open item is this civil suit. So there's a countersuit. So there's Kathy v. Kathy, but then there's the revert. You take the two Ks and you reverse them. It's still Kathy v. Kathy.
That's
so
right.
However you want to look.
And I noticed this in the, I guess it was in the complaint, the federal complaint, the MCG, not the McGinnis, though, the My Campaign Group.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, that was one of the things that our trusted colleague mentioned to me at the pub today. Was that, and now her name escapes me, but the My Campaign.
Tracy Gross?
Something Gross, yeah.
Christy Gross. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is like, hey, you know, you pulled me into this, and now I look like, you know, a
cheapskate.
Yeah. I mean, all I said to Lex today was just like, yeah, I mean, we were there, and we heard it, and yeah, I mean, they made it look sort of nefarious, but to whatever extent weird shit was going on, Kathy was doing it. Not really my campaign group. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I understand why she would feel a certain kind of way about kind of having her shit pulled through the mud. But as a person who sat there and you sat there, like, she just looked like somebody who was like, hey, I was just trying to sell my services to a state employee. I can't help that she's fucking a lunatic.
Right.
You know, like, I don't know what she's doing. Like, I'm just looking to get paid. I have a contract. I'm like, can you pay me my money? Like, I don't know. And really, she came across as just like a, you know, not a part of any kind of malfeasance. Just like, I'm just doing my thing. I'm running my spreadsheets.
Yeah.
You know, I'm making decks. I'm branding. I'm doing branding. You know, I'm just doing my Don Draper shit.
Yeah.
And like, you know, but I guess, you know, I guess that has to be kind of hashed out, but, you know, I do kind of feel bad.
Yeah, I know. I kind of got the vibe that she was like working for like the Democratic candidate for the governor of Virginia, like every 4 years. Like that was like her big gig.
Yeah, and well, so that was like, the Tom Van Horn thing, too.
He
was big with Virginia state politics.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
they're gonna find work.
Who cares? It's all fake. No. It's all fake. Gives a shit. Just do whatever you want. You're fine. Like nobody who's hiring somebody to do fucking branding for their political shit doesn't even care about this stuff. I mean, Tom Van Horn's working. Everybody's working.
God willing.
Inshallah. Yeah. So who gives a shit? So, but it will be interesting to see how that plays out because I want to get your feeling about this.
Of course.
This is the bigger picture right now as far as I'm concerned. And this is something that Carl's going to have to work around. It's going to have to beep. It's going to have to be beeps. But the one thing I found out today, and I'll come right out and say it and then we can talk about the ramifications of it. But a person very close to this situation, his name is, contacted a friend, you know, somebody who would know, and in an email basically was like, sort of, was so funny because he was like, it wasn't a statement of fact. It was just this. It was just that. I said, that's fine. What did he say? He was like, he called the jury like brain dead aliens or something or brain dead something.
Okay.
And so it was like. That, again, it's like completely unfair. Like the jury somehow was unfair. So I'm talking to bro, or I'm talking to. I'm like, look, something got thrown out. Like the jury already let her slide on the felonies, which, again, theft was probably the stupidest thing I've ever saw in my life, because they deposited it. They deposited like $3,000 into your daughter's account.
Yeah. I mean, how do you convict on conflict of interest, but then not on theft? I still.
Here's the thing. That part I understood, because you had to prove like that she had control over her daughter's checking account.
That's right.
Because okay. She signed up for the checking account. But I'm like, it's your college age daughter, and you're depositing literally like a couple grand in there. Like, that's stupid. Like, there's no, that's dumb. Now, what I said from the beginning, and I'll still say this to this day, the other thing that got she was acquitted of at trial was the witness intimidation.
Right.
She definitely did.
Which absolutely.
She absolutely did that.
Also, apparently now reporter intimidation.
Yeah. Like, I listened very carefully to the prerequisite sort of acts, and I listened very carefully to the behavior that I heard in evidence before a certain date, where, you know, Kathy knew or should have known, or her staff knew or should have known. She was playing fast and loose with the rules. We'll just say that. So you know you're playing fast and loose with the rules. You're telling people not to talk. You're separating one party office from another party office. You're literally asking to monitor the email of dozens of people, where literally throughout the whole state, literally like two other people are asking right. for any of it. Like,
and you're also running for some sort of, you know, hypothetical political office at all times.
Right. And
while
that's
your employees
too,
are like working for
as
you.
We can see, it seems to me like Camp McGinnis is still like, this was political. She was going to be the governor, and they ran her out. Alex Mackler ran her out. Like, you are absolutely deluded. You're a delusional person to think that. Now, again, did they do some weird stuff? Like, okay, theft? What? That's stupid. Like, that doesn't make sense. Did they fuck up the structuring thing? Did our friend Frank Robinson drop the bag? Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just two errors on one play, basically.
Although, this, just to just put a pin in that for a sec, and semi-related, the Supreme Court did kind of, like, absolve the AG's office of, I guess it was part of the Brady violation discussion. Like, they basically said in the opinion, Kathy, you and your staff, like, you had access to all these emails the entire time. Like, the AG's office did hold on to it for a while, but they got it to you pretty quickly. Like, once they, like, got their IT shit figured out. And they're also like, Ms. McGinnis, you had access to all this information. You could have just given it to your law firm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So,
and yeah.
So just got to stick up for Frank.
love that guy. We love you, Frank. You're probably living out your retirement in fucking Boca Raton. Good for you, buddy. I will say this. Trial attorneys, who I've spoken with subsequent to the Supreme Court arguments and subsequent to the Supreme Court decision, have said that, okay, like, Kathy had that stuff, but the state particularly is very, very sloppy about this stuff. And I can tell you that I watched a Supreme Court argument in another case that I believe Elliot Margulies from the ODS was arguing. And it came down to the fact that I believe the indictment was wrong in this case, and it got changed way late in the case. There was some sort of basically what sounded like, and again, this is a layperson. I didn't follow the trial. I'm just listening to the arguments in the Supreme Court. It sounded like late in the trial, they noticed a clerical error on the indictment and had to, like, adjust the charge.
It needs to move to Kent County.
And yeah, and they were like, and this was the one, I don't know if you know, like, the state hired this guy, like, real old-fashioned, like, Delaware attorney. He gets up there, he's like, I don't know, I got to turn my hearing aid up. Yeah, judges, like, this guy's, like, okey-doking him in this thing. And then he goes, I remember this, like, I'm just going to paraphrase, but this is what he said. He's like, Your Honors, you know, they fill out these indictments on like a Friday, the last day of the month, and they're just trying to get through them. And I tell them, this is sloppy work. You guys are going to get it. And I try to tell them, you know, you keep your eye out, make sure they're good. And, you know, sometimes they just don't, you know, they just do this. They just mess up. And I'm like, is this, we're in the Supreme Court?
Yeah. Now? Is this a boys will be boys defense?
What are you talking about? And so I remember listening to that and then listening to other sort of trial attorneys tell me that the state does have a sloppy work problem. So like I appreciate, you know, Steve Wood, you know, saying that it's the biggest, you know, Brady violation in the history of the state, because, you know, Kathy had the 50,000 emails, but then the state had the 50,000 emails and the state didn't give you the 50,000 emails until 2 days after.
Right.
Like, you know, okay, we got it, Steve. You know, and so I do appreciate the fact that the state continues to get dinged on this stuff because they're just sloppy. It's a slop. And so this and it has to, somebody has to stand up and be like, hey, get your shit together.
Yeah.
But the biggest point is that.
Do you was there any other like salient info in the unsolicited email? Like, was there a point to it? Or was he just like, was the author kind of just treating it like the comment section of a WDEL article?
That's a good
You know point. What I mean?
Yes.
Like,
yeah. You know, I was laughing so hard and the person told me not to say it,
yeah.
Not to like talk about it. And so I didn't really get into like the, what prompted it? Like what was the context?
Right. Right.
But I guess I look at it like this, like if after all of this, we've talked about it and talked about it, drove to fucking Dover to listen to this bullshit. If you're still like, butthurt about the jury, there's something wrong. Like you got to reassess. You got to lay back in the cut, take a deep breath. Maybe read a book, come back in a week and say, am I really making sense here? Because that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, those jurors were pros. Like,
yeah, I mean, we said it at the beginning. You just don't like, and maybe it's funny because everybody in the middle of it definitely thinks everybody's out to get them. Like, they think they're real important, and everybody's out to get them, and they're scheming, and they're doing this, and they don't want her to be the governor, and she's you know, this and that, Alex Mackler, and this and that. Yeah, that's not right. Like, you gotta get your shit together. You know, as we said at the end of the trial and all throughout everything we've been talking about, Kathy McGinnis was so out of control that people were calling and blowing the whistle. Now, whether she was out of control in a criminal way, again, we've talked about it ad nauseum now. Apparently, you know, what do they say? Look in the scorebook. What does it say in the scorebook? Yeah, she was. So we'll put that to the side. But she wasn't acting appropriately. This is why all these people were like, this woman's a weirdo. And so she opened herself up to some weird shit and got caught up in it. You know, do I think like this was orchestrated by some political thing to be like, oh, she could be the president. She's going to challenge Joe Biden. We got to get her out. No. Like, if you think that, you got to get yourself, pull yourself together a little bit. Like, you're just a low level functionary who is acting weird. And people that worked for you were like, I don't like this. Something's up. And when that got investigated, you acted weirder.
Right.
Like, you made it worse. Like, that's the only thing that happened here.
Let's see if they're really paying attention.
Yeah, that's the only thing that happened.
Let's get Tom VH over to my house.
Yeah. I mean, so it was a little bit troubling to hear that because I don't know, like, sort of developed, sort of, it's not even like parasocial, it's like they're acquaintances, you know, we followed the story about them and we know their family and stuff, and I'm like, you're still on it, you're still on this, like, you've now probably spent about $1 million and more, depending on what happens with this civil suit, depending on what the state does with the last charge. Like, you probably spent $1 million, give or take. Like, you're not going to be at peace with this now? You're going to be saying years and years after the fact that there was something wrong with the 12 people that we saw set in a jury box? Weird. That's weird stuff.
That's really weird. Sour grapes, sore loser.
Yeah, like you gotta take the L. Like,
yeah.
I mean, again, if it were me, first of all, I'd have never been in that situation. Too fucking smart. But getting off on that felony, boy, when you're like monitoring people's emails and basically like making it pretty clear that you're running a you're watching. Big Brother's watching. You know, you got to be quiet. You got to play the game. You know, you don't talk to this part of the office.
Yeah, you got
to
play the game in this segregated office.
Yeah, in this office, they're there and you're here. And if you're here, you got this confidentiality. You're like, I mean, look, you know, you got lucky here. Most people don't get this lucky. Most people don't have $1 million to blow on a criminal defense like this. So, you know what? Go home, reassess, count your fucking blessings. Count your blessings. Because a lot of people sit over there where you're sitting, and they sat in a box for a while because they didn't have that kind of defense. So just count your fucking blessings, really, and just move on. Like, you weren't any good at it. You seem like a nice enough person. You got a family. You know, you had $1 million to blow on this defense. You're a pharmacist. You have a professional licensure. Just fucking do that. You know, you don't have to beat a bell to ball in fucking Rehoboth Beach. Just fucking chill out.
That's your advice?
That's my advice. I mean, I feel like that's good advice.
I think that's fine advice. I mean, counterpoint, freaking runforsomething.org. Just run for something. No.
Now.
No, I think you're right. I think, I mean, that's like the one kind of thing I was reflecting on, other than just trying to get the facts back in my head of 2.5 years ago of trial. I was trying to think like how life before Kathy trial was, and just the amount of like content that me and my friends interacted with back in the day. And that's we're sort of devoid of that now. I'm fine with it. Like, it's great.
It seems like a simpler time, even though it was like George Floyd and shit was going on, and that wasn't great.
No.
But you sort of had like a because of COVID, you had like a purpose.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, this is fun. This is our content. This is what we're going with. We're doing it.
Well, and also to borrow an expression, I guess Hassani mentioned or Carl mentioned last week, like organizer burnout, like it was a way to cope with organizer burnout, like after 2020.
Yeah.
I think in a way it was like you needed to blow off a little steam when you're doing this kind of work, or else you get really bummed out really fast.
Kind of like I was saying at the beginning of this.
Exactly. Yeah.
It was nice to have like a little distraction, because it really didn't matter. You know.
Yeah.
Like,
no, it's like there's a television show as funny as The Kids in the Hall, like being performed like around you at all times. Like, I found it that entertaining, honestly.
There were a few times in the courtroom where I had, remember the Tim Heidecker trial,
of course,
the fake trial.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like some days we were in Carpenter's courtroom and it was like the Tim Heidecker trial.
Yes.
Like, I, you know,
yeah. And Steve helped a lot there.
Yeah. Well, that was the one thing you mentioned, and maybe we'll the last thing we'll mention on the case is that. Chief Justice Seitz did, in a footnote at the last, in his dissent, basically catalog for us some of Steve Wood's greatest hits.
Mm.
So good.
Yeah, that's right.
So good. He you know, that's right there. I mean, you guys will probably link to the decision. It is a long decision, but the dissent is like the last 4 pages. And if you go to the last page of the last page, basically, there's a footnote there. Where Seitz sort of mentions, you know, the kind of rhetoric that defense counsel was using at trial, and just footnotes it. Yeah. And then there's a footnote at the end of like five different statements. Did you write those down? Some of them are real jammers. They're so good.
They are really good. I wrote down that he said inflamed rhetoric.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it was. He said it. He footnoted the phrase inflamed rhetoric. Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was like a lot of quotes involving the basically what you paraphrased earlier, the largest Brady violation in Delaware, U.S. history.
The only one I remember is like when, well, first of all, he was in Frank Robinson's grill about like lying, what was a lie, what was false, what was a police technique, an investigative technique, da 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 da.
You're gonna cry about it.
Yeah, so that was a big thing, and the only other one I remember was when fucking Tom Van Horn was like, so you had sexual relations or whatever. He's like, well, not. He's like, what do you mean, not really? He was like, well, he's like, did you or did you not? He's like, well, he's like, do you not know what having sexual relations is? He's like, yeah, we made out for like 5 minutes.
No,
so that was like that exchange.
Was it 5 seconds?
Was it 5 seconds?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was something pretty adorable.
But it recounted, it sort of, and there was a line in there that sort of recounted that back and forth with Tom Van Horn that I was just like, it just made me smile.
Yeah.
I was like, because I remember that.
Yeah, I mean, what a character.
What a guy.
If we're just talking, we're wrapping up on the opinion itself, I thought there was a great reference that once Master, now Chief Justice Supreme Court Justice Legros, she said, a melange of issues. And I thought that was like really great timing, good synergy with Dune 2 coming out right now.
It's the spice melange.
That's right.
The spice expands.
I hope it was intentional.
yeah. Well, folks, we're going to get into some freewheeling stuff for you guys. But we don't know. Where is this going to go? Will we wrap this up with an in-depth interview of one of the principals? Possibly. You know, will we explain to him dialectical materialism? Maybe. Will he try to razzle-dazzle us with his fancy footwork? Perhaps. But you'll just have to keep following our work to see. All right, we're going to come back and talk to you about something very fun. Comrades and friends, hello. This is an emergency. This is an emergency broadcast of the Highlands Bunker podcast. We're going to give you a little bit of update of what happened today before our regularly scheduled program. I'm very happy to welcome to the show for the first time under sort of great circumstances, but I was hoping like to invite you into the studio and we talk about your life and talk about your background. But today we'll just talk about what happened today. Dunya Ramadan, it's very nice to meet you. You've been organizing with the pro-Palestinian group here in Delaware, and you took action today in Legislative Hall at the State of the State. Thank you very much for jumping on and joining us today.
Of course. Thank you for having me, Rob.
Yeah, I'm so excited. Jordan and I, hello, Jordan. You attended with me, and we went down just to sort of observe the comings and goings at Legislative Hall, and were able to see a group of activists disrupt Governor Carney's State of the State address in order to bring awareness to the Palestinian cause, to the ongoing ethnic cleansing and genocide, and really just the slaughter of people who have been under basically military occupation for decades. So again, thanks for coming. I know that you guys have been doing actions here in Wilmington at the homes of Senator Coons and Senator Carper. In the interest of full disclosure, I participated in some of those because I agree with everything you're doing. So people can just sort of take that as they will. Today, the group decided to escalate those actions. Can you talk a little bit about how the decision came about to do this and why it's important to start to escalate these actions?
Of course, yes. So we had decided, you know, what better time to disrupt than to have all politicians in one place, all leaders of a myriad of institutions in one place, the State of the State. And so We've already tried all of these bureaucratic channels of calls and emails and setting up meetings. And as you all know, that just constantly goes with, oh, we're really hearing you, we're listening, and no, there's there have they really listened? That's the question. Because the actions that we've been seeing for the past few months, and I believe an article that just came out by Maria Trujillo. It was on the, I believe, hold on, what was it? It was the BNN Breaking, the People's Network. She had captured our action quite well in her article. But the politicians in Delaware, leaders in Delaware, have been silent, have been silent and have not taken action, considering that this is the home state of the president of the United States. The home state of the president of the United States, these political leaders, whether they want to admit it or not, have personal connections to President Biden. In addition, this is, again, I've been questioned a lot about this today by a lot of press about, like, why did you choose the State of the State address to address the genocide in Gaza? And I said, why not? Why wouldn't we? Go to the State of the State address. The State of the State reflects the state of the country. It's all intertwined. Everything's connected. And nonetheless, it's quite an interesting question to ask, considering again that these political leaders, Delaware has, it's a hub of power at this current moment. We are the literal backyard of President Biden. And we also have been, aiding and abetting this genocide, whether that be one shipment or two shipments. We sent weapons from the Dover Air Force Base, from, again, weapons were shipped from the Dover Air Force Base in Delaware to again, murder Palestinians. So, Delaware is involved.
Yeah, I think that I was so glad that both in your media sort of appearances today after the action and in the statement that you've made to the press, you're very clear about that. Number one, and as I was still milling around outside the chamber, I did hear somebody say, well, that's a federal issue. What are they even going to do about it? Whatever, whatever. Number one is you have to bring awareness to it, and you have to show how serious it is. Number two, what I said out loud to nobody in particular, but just everybody standing around was, hey, does anybody in this building know Joe Biden? And obviously that's a rhetorical question because literally dozens and dozens and dozens of people who were at that action today and saw what you guys did know Joe Biden. So that's two. Three, as you said, and again, this may be a federal sort of armed services issue. However, arms are going, as has been documented, from the Dover Air Force Base to Israel to use in the invasion, to use in the ethnic cleansing, and to use in the outright murder and genocide of the Palestinian people. As Professor Rashid Khalidi said yesterday, in a talk I heard him give online, every Apache helicopter, every artillery shell, every tank shell, every bullet, every airplane, that's American war machine. Make no mistake about it. And number four is another thing that you mentioned in the press statement that I think bears repeating. Governor Carney himself has publicly shown solidarity to the Israelis, shown support to the IDF, shown in official statements, mourned the victims of October 7th, which is all fine and good. But if the same is not given in even more measure based on the incongruity of the situation and the apartheid and the occupation of the last 100 years, there's really no you open yourself up for this kind of obvious action. So I was really happy that although people will have those questions, that they were answered in a very, very thorough and clear way.
And it's not confusing. It really isn't, because as you had noted, Rob, I just want to readdress this. The Governor Carney again has clearly expressed solidarity with Israel, and he has lowered the, again, this is in the press release as well, but he has lowered the flag after the October 7th attacks, and then he never said a single thing about the Palestinian lives that have been taken with our U.S. tax dollars every single day since. It's been over 140 days. What is this? Do Palestinian lives not matter to Governor Carney? And surely I can answer that question. Yes, they do not matter to Governor Carney. Unfortunately, he can't even mourn the lives that have been taken with our U.S. tax dollars.
Yeah, I think one of the things I want to point out, and maybe I'll get Jordan's opinion about this, because we were there when this exchange happened, and we heard it right afterwards. And in Lex's great, you know, he got it into his article, and I think it's important because Lex asked the governor afterwards what his reaction was, and he said, "Well, you know, it's unfortunate or something, but understandable." Use the word understandable. So Lex, being the great journalist he is, he's like, well, what does that mean in this context? Like, what about it do you understand? Because if you understand why people are escalating to this level, if you understand why people are risking arrest, or if you understand why people are taking this type of direct action and civil disobedience and disrupting these events, if you understand that, then at some level, you know what the fuck we're talking about. So, you know, that was an excellent question, and I really want to point people's attention to that very that detail that Lex has in his article just this evening.
No, that's right on, Rob. Lex asked an important question, and I actually did read that he noted Governor Carney said that it was what is it? A tragedy and understandable?
A tragic but understandable, yeah. And I can tell you, and this is not giving anything away, because I witnessed this firsthand. Lex did say that he was not explained to he was not he did not explain, you know, what he meant by understandable, but he did respond, and his response was like, "We're not gonna, you know, I can't believe we got to argue about the definition of understandable or what it means." Like, he was angry. And he didn't have an explanation. He tried to give a canned response that, you know, when followed up, actually didn't make sense. Or if it did make sense, it put him in a position where he's going to have to explain why why he understood why something like this would take place. So, I just want to go to Jordan really quickly. You know, we were there. The address in the House, the State House chamber, began fairly promptly right after 2 p.m. And for the first few minutes, you know, went off as normal, as you know, as boring as it normally would be. And then the disruption started. Jordan, do you want to give like a little bit of like from your perspective, kind of what was going down in the General Assembly in Leg Hall, and then once you sort of give your thoughts, maybe we'll throw it back to Dunya.
Well, I mean, it was all the pomp and circumstance of like one of the biggest the speeches of the year here in Delaware, the governor giving his State of the State address. And I don't think, I mean, clearly it caught everyone off guard. I mean, there was looks of frustration, you know, not only on Governor Carney, but on folks around the room, at what was happening. And after the first one, I went outside and interviewed the first person who was removed, I believe. I have to go back to my notes here. Michelena, yes, Michelena. And it was then, while I was outside, that Dunya was then escorted out by police. And so I was out there with a couple of other journalists, and you know, as we interviewed them, interviewed them, and eventually went back inside to see, you know, even more people ejected. And it was really just, I mean, just, I mean, I want to say unprecedented. I've only lived in Delaware for what, like, you know, 14 years now, but based on how long I lived here, like, that was an unprecedented action during the State of the State address. And the, you know, governor and his team were clearly not happy with the way things had turned out, especially that it was because it was his last State of the State address.
Yeah, as you tried to move into the chamber a little bit to get an idea of what was going on, and then moving outside and back in to speak to some of the activists that were ejected, I sort of just hung right there in the lobby, and so there would be a calm, you know, few minutes, and everybody would kind of be looking around at what you were going to, what was going to happen, and then you'd hear it again. And somebody would say, oh, it's again. And somebody would, you know, somebody would run up the steps, and two cops would run up the steps. And they were just, yeah, I mean, I can tell you that I think it's fair to say that it's unprecedented. You know, I've lived in Delaware my whole life, and there's, it's really not a hotbed of, like, activist activity. We are famous for having a being part of a huge uprising in the late 60s, obviously. Wilmington was occupied by the National Guard for a period of time, very famously. And, you know, we did have large uprisings during the George Floyd uprising. But something like this, something issue-related that's pointed and happened in a surprise at an event like this, I think it's fair to say it's unprecedented.
And all, I mean, was, you know, one other detail that just sticks in my mind about all of this is it was during the second disruption. It was during yours, Dunya, and I actually only know this after going back and watching the you know, video feed of the State of the State address, where, you know, as you are, you know, beginning to say, you know, 29,000, you know, Palestinian lives have been killed, you know, with U.S. tax dollars. And, you know, Governor Carney had stopped speaking. And then, you know, Representative Longhurst starts, you know, bangs the gavel a couple of times and says something to the extent of, you know, excuse me, you know, order in the House. This is the governor. And he's trying to deliver the State of the State address. And it's just like, I mean, I like, obviously, person, like, that's why they're here. Like, what is, like, that almost made no sense to say at the time. They're just like almost like completely, you know, speechless and caught off guard and had no idea, you know, what to do. And it was just, you know, a completely baffling, I think, thing to say at the time.
And I will say Nurse Susan even watched it today from a remote secured location. And even she, who doesn't really speak about these matters very often, said that Val has very weak gavel game. She said, gavel game, very weak. Horrible. Yeah, I think that that's an important point, too, and it is very funny. We did, you know, we do have all the audio downloaded, so I hope we can play that particular one, because the sound of her voice is sort of like, don't you understand? This guy's trying to give this speech. This is the governor. And like you said, it's like, it's funny because she sounds stupid, but it's also funny because that's the whole point. Like, yeah, that's the point. I can tell you that the press room was absolutely packed. There was, you know, the WBOC, the CBS affiliate, the News Journal's written two pieces already. Delaware Public Media is, I know Delaware Public Media is very interested in, and I don't know, Dunya, if you have heard this, because obviously, we didn't know until after the fact, that after the second or third disruption, the fourth and fifth, or the third and fourth, something like that, they started turning the volume. They couldn't figure out how to deal with it, so they turned all the volume down. So even when the speaker is trying to admonish the gallery, even when the governor is trying to still speak, all of it was just turned way down, because that was, they didn't really know how else to sort of block it out. And I know that that's going to be part of the story too, because initially I think Carney was like, well, we wouldn't do that, you know, they have the right to say whatever, but they did do it, and we have proof that they did it. And so they're going to have to sort of they're going to have to come up with some story about why that's cool. So yeah, there's going to be a lot of a fallout from this because of the way it was handled, because of the brilliant way in which it was organized, I think it's fair to say. And also because it's not going to stop. An escalation is something that shows you where this is going. It's not an end. It's like it's a step to show you where this is going. And maybe just to close out, we'll let you have the last word, Dunya, and then we'll let you drop and get some sleep, and we'll reflect on the other sort of other stuff that we did today. But yeah, go ahead and sort of talk about, obviously, not anything specific, just the spirit of the group, how the group feels, the evening after this action, and how it's going to go forward.
I can say that on behalf of the group, this was a successful action. We have successfully brought attention to the matter at hand, that there is a genocide being committed by the United States in Gaza, by the United States and Israeli occupation. We have brought everything up front and center. As you can see with the articles that have come out so far, everything has been highlighting the importance of what we had done today. No one could ignore our voices today, and that's because all of the power was located in one central location here. We got a powerful hub of people all there, and they were forced to listen because everyone was forced to listen to the governor. So that was the moment where our voices also needed to be heard. And I'm sorry if I'm not articulating this so well. I'm very tired today, but like after this action, but our group is very, very, let's just say we are happy with how the action turned out. We are happy that our voices were heard today, the reporting that came out of it was very in focus, and exactly representative of our demands. They have highlighted the escalation and the urgent time at hand at this moment. They have noted exactly why we were there, right? So I believe that the articulation, I believe that the execution of the entire action on behalf of my entire team, which, by the way, we're an autonomous collective. Like we, all of these people, we have met over a span of like months, weeks, and we're all here trying to stop this genocide. And so this just goes to show, like these are Delaware constituents just getting together. Some of them, by the way, we brought along through our actions. They saw us out here, protesting in front of Coons and Carper's houses, for instance. And I believe we will get into that a bit more too, Rob, in another podcast about those protests. Right?
Yes, we definitely will. Like I kind of wanted to talk about things as a whole, some more of the background, and also how I think the thing you said that's one of the most important things is this is also an organizing exercise. People come and see people stand up and take risks to do something important because it's something they believe in. And I think that's inspirational to a lot of people. I don't think people understand how difficult it can be to do this. I've done it before myself, and just being there today, knowing it was going to go down, I was sort of like really keyed up. I was juiced up for it. So I don't think people really understand that aspect of it. But once again, I'm going to let you go. I know you must be dog tired. Doing your Ramadan. Thank you so much. And we'll be talking again very soon.
Thank you, Rob. I really appreciate. Thank you for having me on the show. I do want to just say one more quick note before I do head out, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I just want to say that organizing with this group of people has been a healing process too. And I want to emphasize this because to all your listeners, because amidst organizing, it's not only like the execution of action and the impact, it's also mobilization and building those community connections and relationships. And so we are growing. People are angry. People are upset. People are sad. People are depressed and devastated. And people want to take action. And this, in particular, this action today just shows, goes to show how much Delawareans out here care. How much they would do to just, how much they would risk to, again, end a genocide. This illustrates the urgency of this matter, and it illustrates how community can get together so quickly and execute such actions in an effective and impactful way. It's passion, it's community, and it's humanity. I'm just going to say that.
I think that's a perfect way to put it. Dunya, thank you so much for joining. We'll see you soon, and be safe until I see you again.
Thanks, Rob. Thank you, Jordan.
Cheers.
Cheers.
I just wanted to mention, as you said, some of sort of like the local fallout. You know, over the next few days, we'll sort of see what kind of traction this gets in the local press. It seems like it's going to have some. Certainly, as we said before, it really is unprecedented. People were, you know, taken by surprise, sort of, and I think we're going to have to explore this idea that Lex sort of took that first crack at what happened today and tried to sum it up with this idea of, okay, understanding. What do you understand about it exactly? Okay, we were just there and we watched, this group disrupt this and be pulled out by police and security, and booed and jeered and sort of laughed at for something that's very important. It's only going to escalate. It's not, the beatings will continue until, such time as we feel like we've made any kind of difference. That's one thing people have to understand too, and I don't know. I'm really going to be excited over the next weeks and months to see what it really means for Governor John Carney to say he understands. What does he understand? What does that mean? If you understand too, if you agree with John Carney, and you also quote understand, what do you understand? Big day. Big day today. Very fun times.
And the first line out of Lex's piece in the News Journal, I think, really captures it all, too, where he says, annual speech. I'm sorry. Let me just read it verbatim here. An annual speech by Governor John Carney that typically focuses on how good things are in Delaware was intermittently interrupted Tuesday by protesters seeking to draw lawmakers' eyes to death and starvation in Gaza. And, objectively speaking, this is his last State of the State address. This, wanted to try and just focus on only the positive things that were happening in the state. I mean, granted, there's no shortage of criticisms or, bad things happening in Delaware that could have been that could be mentioned, but just... what a contrast, I think, was set to by these protesters to his message that, things aren't always rosy in Delaware, right? This isn't Pleasantville.
Yeah, I mean, this the one, sort of as some of the press that was coming in and people were starting to kind of get ready for whatever this was going to be, obviously, most of the press corps did not know what kind of day this was going to be and were sort of asking us, like, hey, what do you expect from this kind of stuff? And, you know, I was really, you know, we were just talking about the speech, and I said, yeah, I've heard many of these. And I said, have you ever been, you know, on a call where the CFO of a company is trying to explain to you why 15 people got fired? It's going to be like that. It's going to be, we move money here, and we put money there, and we got this money to initiate this thing. But it was really it's no real ideas. It's highlighting how good they are, what good sort of technocratic sort of financial people they are. That's what the state of the state is. It's like, look how we manage this money, and we manage the private industry, and we gave some to private industry, and then we, you know, it's just a big sort of numbers game that they can explain to you why, you know, their management of the state as a sort of business entity was good. And this sort of threw a huge, huge wrench in that, because it's not really about that. It's not how you manage the fucking spreadsheet. It's a bunch of human beings, as Dunya just said. There's a humanity to it that most of the people that make decisions here are missing. And I think, you know, hopefully they can reflect on that. If they don't, we'll hit them with it again and again. And again, and again.
I'll just say also one other thing that people should really check out on Lex's story is that more footage. This is something that was mentioned on Twitter. Is there any footage of the protesters, when they disrupted the speech? And some of that footage is now available and is playing along with Lex's story. And, you know, one of the things you can see is that after the second disruption, they just started placing cops in the gallery space to disrupt the, any further disruptions or any further protests as quickly as possible. And some of these, and I think it's the third and the fourth one they have pictured they have filmed, you can even see, you know, people who aren't the police starting to grab and kind of push people out of the space, which I just think is totally inappropriate. People get that it is not appropriate for other people in that space, you know, trying to forcibly remove some of these protesters, from the State of the State address. And, it's just, I just think it's, it's difficult to protest in a situation like that, and it's so very sad to see how some of the people who are in the audience responded to that action.
Yeah, I was able to catch that before we jumped on here, and the last, I think it was the third or the fourth one, where the camera follows them all the way to the back. If you've ever been to Legg Hall, the back of the gallery, sort of steps go down the middle and out the back, and it gets a little rough. After some members of the audience and some members of the gallery were trying to like pull people back and touch them and shit. And as you said, it's completely fucking inappropriate. If you think you're helping, you think you're like the cops or something, just keep your fucking hands to yourself. Cause it got a little bit chippy there, as we used to say. So yeah, I mean, people really took a big chance today, to do a quite a big escalation, and I was proud to see it happen. I was happy to see how well it was organized, how well, the statements afterwards came out, and frankly, just how brave everybody was. So, kudos to everybody. Unless Jordan, you have one other thing to say, I'm sure we'll be talking about it more. Yeah, so as we said, ceasefire now, Philistine Hora, and left is best.